I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. I've watched a lot of debates in my life. It's been part of my job for years and have never witnessed such a chaotic, contentious, and frankly ugly spectacle that took place in Cleveland last night. It was billed as a presidential debate about key issues, the Supreme Court, the pandemic, the economy and taxes, race, voting, climate change, and what they would tell their supporters while waiting for election results. The president trails in the national polls and in key battleground states like Pennsylvania. We're going to play clips from last night. Here's moderator Chris Wallace telling Trump to abide by the debate rules.
So here's the deal.
Good point.
We have six segments. We have ended that segment. We're going to go to the next segment. In that segment, you each are going to have two uninterrupted moments. In those two interrupted minutes, Mr. President, you can say anything you want. I'm going to ask a question about race, but if you want to answer about something else, go ahead. But I think that the country would be better served if we allowed both people to speak with fewer interruptions. I'm appealing to you, sir, to do that.
Well, and him too.
Well, frankly, you've been doing more interrupting than he
has. Well, that's all right, but he does plenty.
Well, less than, sir, less than, less than you have.
He's Putin's puppy. He still refuses to even say anything to Putin about the bounty on the heads of American soldiers.
Your son got $3.5 million.
And by the way,
Mr. President, your campaign agreed to both sides would get two-minute answers uninterrupted. Well, your side agreed to it, and why don't you observe what your campaign agreed to as a ground rule, okay, sir?
He never keeps his word.
Can you add that was a rhetorical question.
Can you add back 30 seconds?
Yeah, yes, you may have.
All right.
And on it went. We asked Dave Weigel to get our conversation started, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, author of The Trailer. Dave Weigel, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. What did we witness last night? What was that?
Boy, that's an existential question.
It is.
I don't think it was a surprise. So something can be shocking but not surprising. I think the Biden campaign and even, Democrats who didn't vote for Biden for years had been wondering what this debate would look like. I heard this a lot when I was in Iowa and New Hampshire and people were deciding between the candidates. The question was, how is this person going to stand up to Trump when he starts yelling and screaming at them? And to be honest, as a reporter, I thought, well, are people overrating that? They clearly weren't. This was a question people have to deal with, and there are two more debates with Trump in them. There's one more with Mike Pence. This is how he talks. This is somebody who watches a lot of Fox News, which tells him he's doing well and shares stories that may not make a lot of sense or may not be covered by other media. So he was operating, I think, in kind of a different informational environment with different rules than Biden was. I don't think it was terribly effective based on the conversation today and based on last night. I mean, the Trump campaign's response literally was, this is the greatest performance in the history of presidential debating, which
is
on brand. And you know, of course, but most of those campaigns don't gild the lily like that, where I think the Biden campaign knew this is going to be, if he wins, the oldest president in American history. He talks slower and differently than he did years ago. Their goal was to get through this thing and to have no moment that made people wonder if he's up to the job. I think objectively that was pretty successful, because we're not talking today about whether Biden stumbled. We're talking about everything he displayed in that clip.
Well, exactly. And we will spend probably the rest of the hour doing a lot of just that. But I could understand based on his Twitter feed and also the way he likes to connect with his voters at his campaign rallies, that his base was very pleased with what they observed last night. But I'm wondering about those undecided voters. I know they're not many of them. And also whether the voters who are supporters of Biden, whether they will feel more energized to go out and vote for Biden based on what they saw last night.
Well, I think in the second point, a lot of the energy in the last week has come from the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the feeling that among liberals is that more acutely something they've been saying, which is if this election goes the other way, if Trump wins again, they're not sure what would happen to the country, which is not something you hear in most elections. When it comes to the base, I think if elections were just about winning the base, I wouldn't have much of a job to do.
Sure.
I think it would be very, very easy for campaigns just go and say, go to their fan base and say what they want to hear and win. And this has been the problem for Trump really since he won the election. Unlike a lot of presidents, with a couple of exceptions. You know, a criminal justice bill that Democrats sponsored and he signed. Very few exceptions. He's done nothing to reach out to the other side. He doesn't meet with Democrats, as Biden mentioned. Even in COVID negotiations, he's kind of waited for the ball to come to him. You saw something revealing last night, which is he tried twice to bait Biden into criticizing the priority of the left, you know, of saying
the Green New Deal, things like that.
Well, the Green New Deal, Medicare for All, et cetera, sure. Even protests and Antifa. That comes from a place of analysis that Trump, kind of does whatever the base wants. The base wants what he wants, and that is his view of politics. You get elected by people, you deliver for them. Biden has a different view of it, which is more in line with what we see from other presidents. And it can come off, I think it came off to a lot of people on the left, as kind of cornpone. You know, why are we talking about, if I'm elected, you know, I'm the president of all the people, why are we talking in these terms when the other side just kind of ran through what they want? But you saw in the debate last night why Biden does it, because if you are just appealing to your base, you don't have enough votes to win the election. The Trump base in 2016 was not why he won. He converted some swing voters, won some independents, some people who didn't think he'd win voted for third parties, right? The Trump base at the moment is, you know, 44% of Pennsylvania, 40% of Michigan, 44% of Wisconsin. Just, those are numbers that would get you to a kind of John McCain-sized defeat. Because he's got a more passionate base than a lot of Republican candidates for president, but has not been trying to add them. And I think he was surprised that Biden was very comfortable saying, I disagree with the left on some things. Mm-hmm. I'm the Democratic Party, not them. There's been some fishing today for liberals and leftists who are angry that Biden did that. There's some of that, but nobody who's so angry to say, I'm not going to vote for this reason.
Well, and this is something the president has been doing for some time now, which is essentially to try to undermine the vote, to make people question whether their vote will count if they vote by mail.
Right.
Now, all the research shows that voting by mails is there. Yes, there can be, you know, minuscule problems here and there, but people should feel confident in that. But that seems to be the message coming from Trump and his campaign, which is do not trust the vote when the votes are tallied. Do you think that's going to work?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get into the weeds of mail voting and all that. It's not that complicated. It's just that we have 50 states and each one has a different election system, right. And they're changing from lawsuits and legislation. But you're right in that the president, he's a conspiracy theorist. He will advance something that he saw online or he saw on television and, you know, inflate. Let's use one example. He talked about these votes found in a wastebasket with Trump on them.
Yeah, up in Luzerne County, yeah, in PA.
In Luzerne and in Wilkes-Barre, yeah. What happened there was that a investigation was launched as military ballots are going out. Military ballots go out very early. The soldiers have the option of literally just writing down the names of who they want and getting it counted. Those came in. There was a contractor that mistakenly, because they looked like absentee ballot request forms, opened them. When you open a ballot, you spoil it.
Right.
And so they were spoiled, and the state was figuring out what to do with it. Cut to last week, the Department of Justice released not one, but they got it wrong and had to issue a corrected press release saying this investigation was happening. But before that, Trump was made aware by the Attorney General of this. And my point being is that most presidents don't go root around the country for some example of six ballots or eight ballots being spoiled. Most presidents would, if they hear about it even, which they wouldn't, might just ask about how you get them counted. What Trump's interest was in saying, this is proof that everything's rigged, and if I lose, it's because it was cheated. And it's a circular argument to have, because I don't think you're going to convince in 34 days Donald Trump to stop talking like that. This is how he views electoral politics. This is somebody who won in 2016 and then began saying that it was rigged because he didn't win the popular vote and there were millions of illegal votes cast against him. He's going to make stuff up, and Democrats are dealing with it in their own way.
Well, it's the message of someone who is losing an election. If he were ahead, we know that he would be supporting mail-in ballots if it showed that he was going to win in November. But, I mean, yeah. All the national polls and a lot of the battleground state polls, including here in Pennsylvania, and of course, polls are just a snapshot in time. But at this point in time, he's got an uphill battle.
He does. And if the, I'm not going to predict how the election goes, but
sure.
if it goes the other way and he does not win, I think people will look back and say, well, he was down by 6 or 7 points for a very long time. What was the reason why people were not covering him? Like, you know, Jimmy Carter was in 1980 or George H.W. Bush as a president in trouble. I think that might change after this debate. He had an opportunity more based on if Biden stumbled or looked lost. He had an opportunity to kind of reboot expectations, and he kind of just emphasized the way he behaves all the time and the issues he talks about all the time. He focused more on, I mean, well, a good example is when the issue of China came up.
Right.
And this is something that he was very comfortable talking about in debates with Hillary Clinton. To Democrats' frustration, I mean, they could not really get a word through on their own trade policy. Trump defined it. Trump has pivoted to talking about Hunter Biden and a very confusing story with a lot of misinformation about it. But one that I don't think, I mean, I'm in Cleveland now, and I did not hear anyone talking about the Hunter Biden's business deals from a few years ago as their top voting issue. Joe Biden was not even mentioning associates of Donald Trump who've been arrested or pardoned. Biden's focus was, let's bring this to economic issues. And I think it got lost, but because Trump wanted to get lost by that focus. But Trump's lack of a focus, I think, epitomized the way this election's gone, which is Joe Biden's performing fine. I mean, he's older. He looks older. He sounds older. He's not delivered any speech that has made people sit back and cheer. But Trump keeps making problems for himself by appealing, as we were saying, only to his base and to nobody else. Emphasizing stories that may not be true because they sound true to him or they sound true to his base. He did that again on a national stage with maybe 100 million viewers.
Well, it'll be interesting. We have about a minute, Dave, before we have to say goodbye to you. But I heard at least anecdotally some people saying, I just couldn't sit and watch the, you know, 90 minutes of this. And it'll be interesting to find out if there is a second and third debate, if the rules are changed, if anyone's going to show up differently. What do you think in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah. Next debate, vice presidential, I think is going to be a lot more what we're
yeah.
used to.
And that's next Wednesday. Yep.
Next Wednesday. Then there's a town hall debate, which I don't think can follow this format. But look, what Trump needed was Biden to have some moment that was so bad that people were sharing it online today, emailing it to their friends. And that didn't happen. So I don't think the debate was very good for the president.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Dave Weigel, thank you for joining us on Radio Times. Thanks for getting our conversation started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's national political correspondent for The Washington Post, author of The Trailer. And we are talking about what happened last night in Cleveland, the first of three debates between President Trump and Vice President Joe Biden. We've got two guests waiting in the wings to continue our conversation, but we want to hear from you. If you watched, if you stayed for the full 90 minutes, we want to know your takeaway. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, it was billed as the first of three presidential debates, but it's hard to describe what happened on the stage last night in Cleveland. President Trump repeatedly interrupted and mocked Vice President Joe Biden, speaking over moderator Chris Wallace's questions and warnings and admonitions to follow the rules. Biden at one point called Trump a clown, a racist, and the worst president the country has ever had. Towards the end of the night, Wallace asked Trump to condemn white supremacists.
You have repeatedly criticized the vice president for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
to
specifically
that,
do it?
Well,
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. Do it. Say it.
Do you want to call him? What do you want to call him? Give me a name. Give me a name.
White supremacists and white
supremacists.
White supremacists and right
proud boys. Proud boys, stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a left-wing
problem.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacist. Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not malicious. That's what his FBI... His FBI director said.
Well, then you know what?
No, we're done, sir.
Well, joining us now is Imani Perry. She's professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. Her latest book, Breathe, A Letter to My Sons, well, she talked about that on Radio Times when the book came out. Imani Perry, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Ed Luce, and he's associate editor and columnist at the Financial Times, author of a book called The Retreat of Western Liberalism. Ed Luce, it's been a while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Imani, let me begin with you and begin with that clip. And just to underscore what the president said about the Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. Chris Wallace gave the president a chance to condemn white supremacists. He did not. What do you make of that interchange?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty standard for the president at this point, right? He supports white supremacists. He encourages them. I think that we have seen evidence that it's an incredibly dangerous posture to take. They were celebrating online after he said that. That is quite deliberate. And it's consistent with his behavior. And the question becomes, how much evidence do voters need to reject this, or if they are nevertheless planning to vote for him, we have to come to the conclusion that there's actually a significant amount of support for white supremacist thinking in the society, which is harrowing.
Well, to you, Ed Luce, and if you're running for office and you have the support of white supremacists, what does that tell you about your candidacy?
It tells me two things. One, there's an element of desperation there. I mean, I think, you know, beyond the sort of talking over and the ugliness of last night's spectacle, we've got to see a president who is very, very rattled and who is heading at the moment for defeat with only 34 days left. And these tax investigations crowding in on him. So, A, it's a sort of measure, I think, of his desperation. But, B, it's a really, you know, as Imani said, this is a flashing red warning signal as to the kinds of things that could happen around polling stations with vigilante kind of groups primed. He stand back and stand by.
Yeah.
What does stand by mean? And so I think it's a very worrying, it was a deeply ambivalent, at best, a deeply ambivalent response to Chris Wallace's question. But at worst, which is I think by now how we should take Trump, a very worrying potential call to arms.
Well, Imani, it's been said many times with President Trump, you get what you see. He doesn't hide behind veiled language or sort of obscure language. He says what it is that he believes and what he feels. There was also a section about the fact that the Trump administration has ended racial sensitivity training, and he made some references to it's the kind of training that teaches people to hate our country. He talks about if you were a certain person and you had no status in life, it was a role reversal, as if that was a bad exercise for someone to go through.
Yeah, there's a couple of levels of things that are going on. I mean, one is it's absolutely dishonest. And we can have a serious conversation about the efficacy of racial sensitivity training.
Sure, absolutely.
But without question, that's just a grotesque mischaracterization. But I think, you know, one of the things that has become evident is that given his terrible behavior, given his lies, what we've seen is that because there is no consequence, things get worse. His behavior gets worse. I mean, if you just compare this to the debates 4 years ago, which were already quite disturbing, I mean, this was, the behavior was histrionic, and it was it's terrifying. And so I think, you know, part of what we're seeing is what will be coming down the pike if this, you know, reign of terror is not arrested very quickly, right? So I'm just a complete mischaracterization and a sort of an attack dog model of governance that is encouraging violence. I mean, the conversation about Philadelphia, where he's telling people to watch what's happening at the polls, that's absolutely has something to do with how Black Philadelphia is. It's not just how Democrat it, you know, is how and this notion that there should be some surveillance of voting of ordinary citizens, which, by the way, is a kind of deputizing, which is, you know, tips on the edge of illegality. But, you know, so all that to say, it's extremely concerning.
Well, and just to pick up on that, and actually to quote Katie Meyer here, WHYY, who wrote about the president's reference to Philadelphia, I'll just quote from her. Several satellite election offices opened in Philadelphia on Tuesday just before the presidential debate. According to reporting from the Philadelphia Inquirer, at least one woman who identified herself as a poll watcher for the Trump campaign attempted to enter a West Philadelphia satellite office but was rebuffed. The satellite office do constitute a new form of early voting, but election officials argue they are not polls. Just to kind of put a bit of a fact check there. Ed Luce, let me just pick up on what something that Imani Perry just said about for the president hasn't had to kind of face the consequences of his actions. And I think this probably goes back to when he was a businessman in New York and in Atlantic City as well. But what do you make of that?
Well, consequences, you know, if you think through what they could be for Trump, I mean, in the context, for example, of the New York Times story, which was a revelation to us, to some degree, a revelation to us, an excellent story, but I don't think it was a revelation to Trump. This is in his head that he has creditors crowding in on him. He's aware that, as Mueller was aware, that Trump has immunity whilst he's president, mostly, and loses that completely when he ceases to be president. So I think, you know, the context of your question is how soon he could be losing that immunity and what the consequences could be. I mean, I'm not a tax attorney, but I've spoken to tax attorneys and read the opinions of tax attorneys since that story came out, and there is at least prima facie evidence there of potential fraud, which is a criminal. It's a felony. So the sort of existential nature of consequences for Trump now is all of our problem. It's all of our problem. He has nothing to lose. I think, judging from his behavior and his words last night, he has nothing to lose from breaking every norm in the book to try and stave off those consequences. And that's, you know, to me, I don't normally sort of sound quite this emphatic, but to me, that does produce a visceral dread, really, of what could happen around this presidential election.
The weeks ahead, and of course, the weeks after the election day. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. I want to read a couple of comments. I want to get James from Malvern to join our conversation. That is Ed Luce. He is associate editor and columnist at the Financial Times. Also with us, Imani Perry. She's a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University, and we called them up and had them join us today in Radio Times to talk about last night's debate. I'll be honest, I prepared an interview not watching the debate, thinking, well, this might be what happened. And obviously, I had to throw that entirely out the window and start afresh based on what did happen there. Let me just read a comment from Richard. Trump appeared dangerous and deluded, which equals dangerous. I do want to talk about the moderation, but let me just get James from Malvern to join our conversation. And James, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, good morning. I'm a dump truck driver, and I was really anticipating what the morning chatter was going to be on the CB radios as all the trucks were preparing to leave the yard. And I wasn't disappointed. There, you know, all these Trumpers were, claiming victory. And I can't use the language I used on the radio this morning on the radio here. So, but I told them that there's no such thing as I said that was not a debate. I said that was Donald Trump lowering us to a reality SHIT show, and that's his forte. That's all he can do. That's all he's got. And I said, you guys wouldn't know a debate if you fell over one. And driving around today, I just realized that, you know, if Trump is going to create this non-debate situation, then we should do something that goes against the history of all debates. And they should be, they shut down people's mics or be in booths where you can hear real answers and the other person cannot possibly, or you know, shut down their mics so they seem like a raving lunatic in the distance of that or, you know, it's just, I don't know.
No, I hear you. James.
Yeah.
No, I hear you, and I appreciate it. And it's interesting to hear how people are talking about this on their CB radios. And I do want to talk about the debate and the moderation and the format and all that. But Imani, let me give you a chance to respond to what James was telling us about what he's hearing from his fellow truck drivers and how they were talking about the debate. And they said Trump won.
Right. Well, and, you know, I mean, this is my concern. I mean, the behavior was so bullying. Essentially, every time that Biden said something that might be politically damaging, Trump spoke over him, right, and began his sort of series of attacks. And that is a kind of conventional sort of behavior that is attached to sort of bullying, toxic masculinity, the sort of expressions of dominance, right? And so there wasn't really an opportunity for people who might be swayed to think differently because they literally couldn't hear. But I just wanted to actually, can I mention one point that is relatively small, but really struck me? Because one of the things that I, you know, that doesn't get sort of talked about sufficiently, I think, is Trump's incredible classism. And there was a moment when he talked, when he talked about intelligence, and Trump made mention of the fact that Biden went to the University of Delaware, right, went to the flagship institution of his state, as though that was a mark of him as inferior. And I just thought, this is so, you know, just terrible, both because we have, you know, a significant part of the population that has not attended college, but this idea that the relative status of an institution is a measure of intelligence, particularly for men that age, right, when where you went to school had everything to do with class. I mean, there wasn't any sort of remediation of that. It just struck me as a kind of ugliness towards a significant portion of his base.
Well, that's interesting. Ed, let's talk a bit about the format, the moderation. I've moderated debates. It's really hard, I promise you. And being a solo moderator with all that incoming, nonetheless, I mean, I do have to say that I was shouting at my television last night about, you know, telling Mike Wallace to tell largely the president to pipe down and be quiet and stop the insults and stop the interrupting. He did do that, but it seemed it wasn't really working. In hindsight, was there something Chris Wallace could have done that he didn't do it?
Well, I felt quite sorry for Chris Wallace. I mean, you know, unlike him, I was able to have a nice glass of red wine in front of me,
which I think might have helped him
deal with that kind of really unprecedented situation. I've heard quite a lot of chatter since last night's debate about how you can manage, you know, after all, this is the president. He's an overbearing man. He's in front of you. He is shouting. He is not listening to any of the rules that he and his campaign have signed up to, and you are in continually insisting he stick to the rules and he's ignoring you. What do you do? And I've heard a lot of chatter about, well, can you just turn the mic off?
Yeah.
I've also heard chatter, and I've seen some pieces about, you know, whether Biden would be justified in saying, look, you've given me all the abuse you've got. That wasn't a debate. Go back to Twitter where you belong. I'm not gonna do any more debates with you. I don't think ultimately that would be a wise strategy from Biden, because he'd be accused of running and hiding. But it's an entirely understandable kind of chatter to have, because it was an immensely ugly, yeah, democracy deflating spectacle to watch. I mean, if I was sitting in Beijing last night, I would have had it on every channel. I would have been broadcasting it to the Chinese population. So this is what democracy is.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, whether you can blame Chris Wallace. I think he did his best. I'm clueless as to what else you could do.
Well, Imani, let me read a couple of comments. One from Matthew: why didn't the Biden campaign insist that microphones be turned off when it's not your turn? A comment from Diane: they need to fix the debate format for the next time. Have fact checkers on both sides, have a bouncer even, and if someone interrupts, they lose their time. They act like children, and they should be treated so. An email from Marie: rewrite the debate rules to allow two reprimands or reminders per candidate to be quiet during the opponent's supposedly sacrosanct 2 minutes, and the third infringement, turn off the offender's microphone for that period. And without getting too deep into the weeds here, both sides apparently agreed to the rules and regulations. I don't know whether it's back to the drawing board on this particular issue, but in about a minute or so, Imani, is there a fix here, do you see?
I do think, you know, there could be a couple of changes, right? You could turn off the capacitor, turn off the microphones, or actually not have them sort of in the same space. I mean, literally ask one a question and then ask another question, like really sort of throw out the debate structure in some ways. But I will say that, you know, just really quickly, that, you know, what the impression is concerning to me, because, you know, Trump is very good at creating chaos, and he dominated the discourse in some ways. And so there is this sense that of even-handedness in lots of the accounts from journalists and, you know, and that's worrying, because it really was Trump who began this process of constant goading. But the effect was that they were both, that the whole scene was out of control. And that, you know, I think is an issue.
Well, let's take that break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. And that's Imani Perry. She's a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. Also with us is Ed Luce. He's associate editor and columnist for the Financial Times. We are dissecting last night's presidential debate, the first of three debates. The vice presidential debate is next Wednesday night. We'll do the same for them on Thursday. And we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and call us. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Aim, and I'm talking with Ed Luce and Imani Perry about last night's debate. We've been talking about the moderator, Chris Wallace, the performance of the two candidates, Trump and Biden, frankly, what it says about the state of our electoral politics and what happens next. And again, you can join us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ed, you had mentioned the New York Times expose of Trump's taxes and his use of the tax system, his extraordinary amount of debt, his failures as a businessman. Do you think that got enough attention last night?
Well, there was an answer that Trump gave at one point when Chris Wallace asked how much tax you paid in 2016 and 2017. And of course, the New York Times had revealed that he only paid $750 in federal income tax. And Trump answered, I paid millions. I paid millions and millions. I mean, Biden had already said, release your tax returns. And Trump had already said what he's been saying for years, which is, I will when the audit is over.
Right.
And so we got a little bit more on that. I don't think it was remotely adequate. Audit, you know, for a $72 million rebate that Trump got is no bar on Trump releasing his tax returns. There's absolutely nothing in the law that says that that would give him any more right to privacy than he would otherwise have as president. So I would have liked to have seen Biden in this case press much more firmly on Trump to release his tax returns. We were wondering, how is Trump going to respond to this New York Times story? And his previous answers in 2016 and since then have been, look, smart people pay low taxes. Right. You know, you've got to be dumb to pay high taxes. Well, it's clear that he switched his argument now to saying, actually, I paid millions, which, unless the New York Times is literally making stuff up, is a direct lie that is disprovable.
Imani, we've spent a lot of time talking about President Trump, and that often happens in these conversations. But how did you think, broadly speaking, looking at those 90 minutes, how did you think Vice President Joe Biden did?
There were moments that in which he was very effective. I think that when he turned to the camera and spoke directly to the American public, that was effective. I did think that his response to the goading was he allowed himself to be manipulated quite a bit by Trump. And I don't think that was sort of the best strategic response, but I can understand that with that degree of provocation that was in some sense irresistible. And I honestly, though, I will say, I think that the composure he maintained with the nastiness that President Trump displayed with respect to his son, who has died, was just extraordinary. I mean, I can't, that degree of composure is something that ought to be, at the very least, sort of impactful to voters.
Well, Imani, let me play that section from the debate. And again, this is Vice President Joe Biden. He's speaking about his son, Beau Biden's military record, and he's responding to attacks from President Trump about his son, Hunter's military record and drug use. Let's give it a listen.
My son was in Iraq. He spent a year there. He got the Bronze Star. He got the Conspicuous Service Medal. He was not a loser. He was a patriot, and the people left behind were heroes.
Really?
And I resent.
Are you talking about Hunter?
I'm talking about my son, Bo Biden. You're talking about.
I don't know Bo. I know Hunter. Hunter got thrown out of the military. He was thrown out, dishonorably discharged.
That's not true.
For
it wasn't dishonorably.
Cocaine use. And he didn't have a job until you became vice president. And once you
None
became
of that
vice
is
president,
true.
He made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow,
that is simply
and various
not
other places.
True.
He
my
made
son,
a fortune.
Gentlemen, my son.
And he didn't have a job.
My son, like a lot of people we know at home, had a drug problem. He's overtaken it. He's fixed it. He's worked on it. And I'm proud of him.
And it's so painful to listen to because we know about Beau Biden's death a couple of years ago, the impact that it's had on the president. And of course, you know, going after someone's child, the Hunter Biden situation is complicated. But when you listen to that, what do you think?
Look, you can't fail but to feel some sadness and pain on Biden's behalf you know, he has one son left. And here is the president using that son to attack him. I think the temptation would have been, which Biden resisted, to get down in the mud with Trump and say, well, you want to talk about your kids? You want to talk about people profiting off of your name, monetizing your power? And he didn't do that. And I think that was probably wise. You get down in the mud. Trump's the one who enjoys being in the mud. And I think it was good that Biden said, you know, look, he's had drug problems. A lot of people's kids do, and we've dealt with that. But I, you know, just on a human level, couldn't help but feel rather sad that's what's being debated at the first debate for the decision about who will be commander in chief for the next 4 years. It's going to keep coming back, as it did last night, and I expect will do in the second and third debate. Biden, I guess, just has to keep his cool.
I mean, Imani, and this goes to Trump's criticism of John McCain, of Gold Star families. I mean, these used to be issues, crises, problems, pain, suffering that was off, you know, you didn't do that. And yet these norms seem to have been tossed out the window by the president, and it doesn't seem to hurt him among his supporters. I'm sure some of whom do have members of the family who are in the military.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking and it's fascinating because there's the issue of norms, but then there's also just the capacity to be empathetic, which he seems to completely lack. The character issues are just, I mean, and then beyond sort of political differences, the character issues are just vast. I do wonder about what it says about us as a nation, right? Not us specifically, because I don't think this conversation is amongst Trump supporters, but us as a nation that, that this person could even be viable for re-election, or in the first place, someone who just seems to lack very basic aspects of human integrity.
Let me just read some comments, and then I have one more clip from last night's debate. Noel says, watch the whole thing. Nothing surprising. Why would anyone watch the other two? A comment from Cliff, I feel like I'm witnessing the decline of the American empire. Trump acted like a boorish authoritarian, while Biden did seem weak and frail, a representative of an ancient form of pandering liberal Democrat using outdated debating tactics. A tweet from Megan, I don't understand how Trump supporters could have watched the debate last night and walk away thinking their guy is anything but a racist. They are voting for a racist. So what does that make them? It's hard to have hope these days. Well, this may not help you, Megan, but let me play one more clip from last night. And this was near the end of the debate, and Chris Wallace, the moderator, asking the president if he would tell his supporters to stay calm until the election results are in and the election independently certified. Let's give it a listen.
Will you urge your supporters to stay calm during this extended period, not to engage in any civil unrest? And will you pledge tonight that you will not declare victory until the election has been independently certified? President Trump, you go first.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen. I am urging them to do it. As you know, today there was a big problem. In Philadelphia, they went in to watch. They're called poll watchers, a very safe, very nice thing. They were thrown out. They weren't allowed to watch. You know why? Because bad things happen in Philadelphia, bad things. And I am urging my people. I hope it's going to be a fair election. If it's a fair election, I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
And we took care of fact-checking what he said about bad things happening in Philadelphia. Ed Luce, let me go back to you. And you referenced this early. We've got, about 5 weeks or so before the election, but we're not going to know the results on election night. It's not possible. For instance, here in Pennsylvania, we have mail-in voting, but the actual counting doesn't start until election day. So clearly the results will not be available that night. What do you anticipate over the next 5 to 10 weeks?
I'm glad to see that Florida does permit the counting of mail-in ballots before November the 3rd, because, that's also an important swing state along with Pennsylvania. What do I anticipate will happen? Look, the most important line from last night was a line that wasn't said, and that was Trump pledging to abide by the results of the election, whatever the outcome. He didn't say that. We are in uncharted territory. We don't know what happens when the president of a democracy, with all the awesome panoply of powers at his disposal, from the Insurrection Act to the deep loyalty of the Attorney General, Big Bill Barr, to the various paramilitary groups that the DHS has, and the ability to federalize the National Guard, and of course the bully pulpit in that situation, to say, as he said last night, we want a result on November the 3rd. We don't want a result weeks later. We want a result on the day from people who have voted in person. We are not in charted territory. I would like to sort of think that there are sort of clear rules for how you deal, break the glass, and how you deal with a situation like this. But there isn't. There hasn't been a dry run. We haven't had this tested out before. And I don't have much confidence in Trump having any inner moral or ethical limits to what he thinks he can do. The next 5 to 10 weeks, as I said earlier in the show, do give me a little bit of dread.
Imani Perry, let me read a comment from Gil from Philadelphia. He says, I believe that Trump has created lots of opportunities for people across the board of all races and religions. You need to stop dividing people by race. He did well last night, and I predict that he will win Pennsylvania. Putting the prediction aside, because I think we don't know the answer to that, but in terms of Gil saying that this is a president who has reached out to all racial groups, all religious groups as well, what do you say in response?
Well, I mean, I think that's absurd. And you know, it is consistent, however, with Trump's practice of being just completely dishonest. I mean, we have to think about what is the consequence of a practice of just lying as a matter of course, without hesitation, without any embarrassment, even after being caught in a lie, and how that shapes our culture. So notwithstanding, I mean, just abundant evidence of discrimination, literally of every sort, at every turn, that people can say, oh, well, he's actually done something different. And so that, you know, it's not just worrisome, but it actually, I think, is provoking a crisis. One of the other comments said, I think I'm seeing the decline of the American empire. I do think that is a serious concern. And, you know, and what that means is not simply, that maybe things will be different. There are some people on the left like me who see that as not necessarily inherently a bad thing. I think it is, because what is the kind of lawlessness, the out of control consequences of that prospect are very, very dangerous for us in multiple ways, from coronavirus to violence in the streets.
Imani, just a quick follow-up to that, because Vice President Biden said, look, I don't support the Green New Deal. He really was putting himself at arm's length with the more liberal, left-wing, progressive part of his party. If you don't mind, in just a couple of seconds or less, does that bother you? Do you feel like, you know, that you wouldn't vote for him because of that?
Oh, I mean, it wouldn't impact my vote. I mean, listen, I do not agree with either Biden or Harris on a vast number of political issues. But I think, you know, Latasha Brown says it this way, you know, voting is harm reduction, right? One cannot minimize the impact on regular people's lives if one doesn't participate in this process. We are talking about the prospect of just a dramatic increase in human suffering. We have 207,000 people dead from coronavirus. So to me, it's a non-question. One does not have to agree with Biden's position on the Green New Deal. I do not. And yet, of course, I'm voting for him. Because the alternative is far more deadly and dangerous.
And we're almost out of time here, but in 2016, there were 100 million eligible voters who did not vote in that election. What does that tell you?
Well, I'm seeing reports from Knight Foundation, I think, yesterday, that they're estimating another 100 million won't vote this time. And, you know, even if Trump loses, 60 million will vote for Trump. So we're going to get 190 million or so Americans, we're going to get 160 million or so Americans either not voting or voting for Trump. Words fail me. The right to vote is a very precious thing, and I think I would be more concerned almost about those not voting than those voting for Trump. This is a sacred right, hard fought, and it needs to be fought to be retained too.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Ed Luce, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Associate editor and columnist for the Financial Times, Imani Perry, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. Quick comment from Paul in Reading. It seems like we always hear from the liberal perspective. We need to hear more conservative voices giving analysis of the debate and the race. We will do that. We have done that in the past, Paul. So stay tuned. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.